Hello, and thanks for joining us for this episode of Education in Focus South Asia, a series of podcasts focusing on areas of debate in education in the South Asia region, brought to you by the British Council. My name's Rob Lewis, and later on, you'll be hearing my co-presenter, Simon Borg. In several conversations we've had with guests in this series, the starting point has been getting children into school, making sure every child has access to education. This naturally relates to inclusive policies, though there's much more to inclusion than just getting all children into schools, as we'll hear. Inclusive education, then, is the theme of this episode, and our first guest is Phil Dexter. Phil spent many years leading in this area for the British Council, and he spoke to Simon about inclusion, drawing on his broad experience of policy and practice around the world. To begin with, Simon asked Phil to define what inclusive education is.
I think that this question is a very, very important place to actually start. Through kind of United Nations and actually UNESCO, I think 25 years ago was a very important meeting of about 100 countries, which was held in actual Salamanca in Spain, and that was a kind of seminal kind of agreement in terms of how to support learners who are either outside education or not actually being engaged in education, and this was really focused on identifying special educational needs and disability, and to ensure that everyone had access to education. This was really, really important because, and there's been progress in terms of people in education. But I think the thinking now today is how do we move beyond the concept of special educational needs, which is seen as a kind of for learners who needed additional support, to how we support learning for everyone. You know, and I think inclusive education really involves that all learners bring a whole series of issues, needs, and of course skills and talents, really inclusive education, very briefly, really is how do we use the best of all these talents for everyone to ensure the best progress possible for everyone.
So special educational needs, then, would it be fair to say is an older term which focused on perhaps disability, whereas inclusive education is perhaps a more broader term which also focuses on talents that students have?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I would like to say straight away that we definitely don't say that special educational needs doesn't matter, and I think naming needs is really very, very important. You know, and whether somebody might be on the autism spectrum, have been identified or even not identified with a range of needs. Dyslexia is an obvious one in terms of schools and, you know, in terms of reading and writing and literacy. And for many learners, the naming is very, very important. And I know that many learners see that as kind of liberating as well, to have that to be assessed. Very important for teachers, for parents, for everyone. But the important thing is that that's not the only thing that defines our learners' needs, and the need to kind of see beyond that label really is what's really important.
Now, the British Council has a professional development framework for teachers. This defines the kinds of professional practices and competence teachers need, and inclusive education is in fact one of the items on this list. So could you tell us a bit about the different elements that are covered by inclusive education in this framework?
Yes, sure. I mean, what we've kind of identified really is the areas around inclusive practices is things like recognizing and valuing diversity amongst our learners, and as I say, that's a whole range of needs really. Their cognitive ability, academic ability, whether there's any kind of physical needs and issues. Social and economic background is a very, very important aspect as well. There's behavioural differences, which is a very broad concept. Disability itself, of course, is a key factor, but other issues like age, gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religion and belief, these are all part of the various factors that kind of make up those differences. And of course, our approach is how do we both actually celebrate and use those differences that may impact negatively or actually positively on learning?
And so the message through the professional development framework is that it's important for teachers to be aware of these kinds of elements and to understand how they impact on learning. Is that right?
Yes, it is. And I think, you know, and what we would say in terms of good practice is how can we kind of, you know, because these are a lot of very different separate areas. They interconnect. You know, we use the term intersectional in terms of how we understand our learners, so that we know that they don't work in isolation, and they're, you know, that if you talk about gender, you may be talking about disability as well. You may be talking about religion and belief. What we say in the UK, which I think is useful kind of globally as well, is that we kind of redefine all of this into five kind of areas. And these are cognition and learning, you know, kind of what are the differences in the way that we learn, and what might be the behavioural and social and emotional and social learning needs. And that also includes issues around mental health as well. Aspects of communication and interaction. And then we might have what we call the sensory, which is visual, hearing and mobility. And then a whole range of issues that we might call actually societal exclusion factors. And that, you know, that's a whole range of things. I think if we can redefine all those features into those five areas, I think then we can look at how we can support learners. And I think just add one other thing, and instead of identifying, I mean, identifying those differences is really, really important, to say both the positive and negative. But what we can do as teachers and as teacher educators in schools is kind of notice how they're playing out in the classroom, you know, and that's the way we get our evidence in terms of what the strengths and weaknesses are of all learners. And fundamentally, this is really about understanding our learners, which, of course, is one of the other actual professional practices.
So it's clearly important for teachers to be aware of some of the issues you've mentioned, Phil. In terms of educational systems more generally, why is it important for them to have clear policies regarding inclusive education?
I think kind of policy is the starting point, because once we have a policy, then we can then move to action. I think the whole nature of school systems, you know, for a long time, in a sense, schools were kind of exclusive. And, you know, it's really about academic achievement first and foremost. And that still remains really, really, really important. But, you know, this really links with the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which is really, and especially goal number 4, focused on education and basic education and lifelong learning, that if we really want to ensure that everyone has the best possible chance to engage in school, then we're talking about mass education. And so understanding how all those differences interact and how they support learning is really, really important. And of course, having good policy, both policy at national level and then at school level, is the starting point, obviously, for us implementing inclusive practices.
And following up on that, Phil, what does effective policy in relation to inclusive education actually look like?
One is policy. You know, what do we have in place and what's stated and how are we going to do it? Another is, what does that mean for practice in schools and how we identify that? But there's a third element, which we'd call culture. And we mean educational culture here. And that would be how do schools work with actually professional agencies, how they work with parents, how the school itself becomes an example of kind of inclusive policy. And the important issue is how do we align those three elements, really, and policy, culture, and practice. Something else we'd say that goes along with that is the elements of that policy. One is access is the starting point, and that is how do we ensure that learners are actually in school in the first place. And all the policies around that, and there may be some legal issues, and there usually will be legal issues around that. But access itself is not enough. What really matters is what we call engagement. So it's, you know, what is the quality and nature of the experience that learners are experiencing? Linked to that is something we might call enablement, which is what are the skills that teachers and schools have in order to promote inclusive practices. And a fourth element is kind of empowerment, you know, and this really is very much about do teachers and do schools have the power to innovate? And that, of course, comes from school leaders and also education authorities. And so all of this working together, I'd say, is kind of this is the stuff of kind of inclusive practices. And this is what will make it work. The other element, of course, to this is that implementation is always local. And so we can work on the best principles and good practice, but it's what happens in practice locally that really matters.
And if I could push you a bit further on that theme, are there particular countries or states within countries which are internationally seen to be good models in relation to inclusive education in both the levels of policy and implementation?
There's at the moment a very interesting project in South Africa, which is trying to embed a module in pre-service education on inclusive education, and linking it to a school practice. Now this is still at very early stage in terms of preparation, but it's I think this is where the training needs to start. As I said, I think in the end, all good experience will be local, but based on these good principles. If you can apply those principles of policy, culture, practice, and then the access, engagement, enablement, empowerment, then we're getting a long way to actually doing it. Now, I think it's important that most of this will start with small steps, and I think but small but significant steps. That can really make a difference.
So the project in South Africa sounds very interesting, and that relates to what you said about enabling teachers. So one of the questions I did want to ask you is, what are the implications for an effective approach to inclusive education for the preparation of teachers? So perhaps you could comment on that issue for us.
Well, I think it's important that if it's going to be embedded in a kind of first degree or even in postgraduate degree, it needs to be rooted in the understanding of what inclusion and exclusion has been in that particular country. With the example of South Africa, obviously the whole issue of apartheid and what inclusion and exclusion has a very specific meaning, but each country will have its own history. So I think teachers or future teachers understanding what the situation has been, what it is now, and what it can be in the future is really important. But then it really, really needs to be linked to, well, what's the reality of your own specific school systems, and how can that make a difference? How, showing that inclusion is not something separate from kind of syllabus, curriculum, assessment, etc. And how we embed an inclusive approach within existing systems is the way that we'll begin to make progress.
And related to that, Phil, how much individual responsibility can teachers be expected to take for these kinds of issues in relation to inclusive education?
I think it's important to understand that, I think a lot of the evidence is there that the role of teachers and their relationship with their learners is such a huge element in terms of progress and change, and again that really really matters. But it's not really possible to have inclusion in one classroom as well. So actually working with other teachers, working across the school, working across schools, and sharing ideas are the elements that will make a real difference.
That suggests the importance of addressing inclusive education at the level of the system, rather than expecting individual teachers to carry that, in a sense.
Yes, as I say, I think the role of teachers and what they do and working with learners is key and crucial. And without that, it's not going to happen. But that kind of systemic change is absolutely essential as well. Which I have to say is really as much a question of attitude as it is about funding and resources, although obviously funding and resources matter, and you can't do without that. So I think the two have to go hand in hand.
So just to go back to something you mentioned earlier, Phil, you said that in the UK there are examples of good practice in relation to inclusive education, but there are also many challenges. Could you comment on some of the challenges that arise more generally when educational systems are trying to implement a more effective approach to inclusive education?
I think a lot of the challenges are around that it may seem easier to do at kind of primary, where where kind of the syllabus and it is much more integrated and joined up. Often it's a teacher who's teaching many subjects. I think at secondary school that becomes much more of a challenge, where subjects are atomized, and just the whole nature of schools, time and space and resourcing, it's very hard to actually work on teachers having time to actually work and plan together. But I think that is something that really needs to be addressed, and again, that is a responsibility at the school leadership level to actually allow that. I think we do need to get beyond, of course, that resourcing and funding is really, really important, and we can't survive without that. It is a question of kind of attitude. And if there is that attitude change, then many, many other things can follow from that. One of the approaches that's taken in the UK is a very simple model, which is often and well used. And it's called assess, and that is assess the learning need, not the special need. Plan, do, and review. And that's a kind of cycular approach. So what's working, and looking at how that's best working, what isn't working, what do we need to change? And I think that's the kind of model for kind of making progress.
In terms of working towards some kind of conclusion here, what are some key messages from international work and research on inclusive education that it would be useful to draw to the attention of educational policymakers in South Asia?
You know, I think a first key message really is, and this takes us to where we've gone from special educational needs to more inclusive practices approach, is starting very much from what the learner can do rather than what the learner can't do. You know, we also take what we call a kind of social model approach, where it's not the learner that needs to be fixed, but it's the duty and obligation really of countries, society, education systems to adapt to actually include everyone. I think key messages will be how we value and celebrate everyone's contribution, really. And what we've already discussed, that there's a lot teachers can do in the classroom, but it needs to be whole school approach as well. And what we also call a multi-agency approach, working with professionals outside of schools and parents. Very much that inclusion needs to be absolutely there at the beginning of planning of anything, whether it's a planning of the school year or a planning of a policy, that, you know, how do we factor in inclusive practices in terms of everything we want to do?
That was Phil Dexter speaking to Simon. Phil's main points at the end there are globally relevant, but of course, each region will have its own priorities. To zoom in on the South Asian context in this area, I spoke to Dr. Huma Masood. Huma works as a gender and education specialist in the New Delhi office of UNESCO. I asked Huma to start by giving a brief overview of inclusive education policies in South Asia.
So most of the countries, if you look at, have the provisions, they have the policies, they have programs, schemes, evaluation of schemes have been done. So we can say that there is political commitment in most of the South Asian countries. There is commitment towards inclusive education in most of the South Asian countries. And all countries are working towards improving the educational policies, programs, and reforms are being done in order to make education system more inclusive.
The fact that there is that commitment sounds promising, but there are presumably issues to manage as well.
The issues are that framing of policies is there, but when it comes to the commitments, consistencies, applications, that is where we need to really do more work. If I take the Indian example, then if we look at the data system, are we capturing the numbers? Because when we look at the out-of-school children, the number of children who are out of school, the higher percentages of children with disabilities who are out of the system. When we look at the provisions of special educators in the school system, we see that since the pupil-teacher ratio is so high in the school, then we do not see that the teachers are trained to handle the inclusive classroom. And the support of the special teachers is not accommodated in most of the schools. So there is a gap between what is said and what is being implemented.
So essentially, the desire is there in the policy, but implementation generally isn't working.
There are various levels of steps which are required. Of course, it is that we require curriculum reforms. We require to do professional development of teachers. We need to have a very strong coordination mechanism. Again, I'll come back to India. Always we thought that the issues of children with disabilities is to be handled by Ministry of Human Resource Development, MHRD. But when we look at the early intervention programs or the preschool education programs, this is the responsibility of Ministry of Women and Child. When we look at the early interventions in health-related issues, the whole domain of addressing these issues of children with disabilities would be with the health department. When we look at the accessibility, when we look at providing incentives and schemes, there is another particular ministry which would be responsible, and we realize there are almost 26 to 31 ministries or departments responsible in one way or the other to address the issues of children with disabilities.
Really? Now that's clearly a huge number of ministries in a very complex situation. Is there any way of overcoming that or changing that?
Yeah, it is complex, and therefore the coordination of each of these systems are important, and UNESCO for the first time took a lead in establishing a national steering committee and also setting up an inter-agency working group both at the national level and at the state levels, wherein all departments are now talking to each other and also understanding their roles and responsibilities, and that is what is required in the system.
Now, in our interview with Phil Dexter, he mentioned the importance of starting with small steps. Do you agree with that idea? And what kind of steps, what kinds of small steps would you start with?
Well, I would say with confidence, yes, because I always feel that there are always small steps which you take, because inclusion is a process. And in inclusion and in this process, you need to have identification of barriers and removal of these barriers. And it requires participation. It requires emphasis to be given to the children with disabilities. And we have to see and identify who are at risk of marginalization, who could be excluded, who are underachieving. Wherever there is absence of policies, how we can address those in order to create or make ground for inclusive education and make this a reality. Wherever there's intent, there only we can bring change. And therefore, we have to change the discourse at the country level in order for us to have inclusive and integrated education. Basically, if we conclude, it should be that the values of justice, equality, and dignity of all should be upheld.
That was Dr. Huma Masood of UNESCO talking to me there. I'm with Simon now. Simon, those were strong words at the end there from Huma, that values of justice, equality, and dignity should be upheld for everyone.
Absolutely. This is a fundamental issue for any education system, to make sure everyone is treated the same. And as Phil was saying to me, you have to have inclusion in mind when you're planning anything in education. It has to be part of it right from the start, every time.
One thing I noticed from listening to these interviews is that inclusion is a huge area, perhaps. Some people associate it with physical disabilities, some with learning disabilities, others with gender equality. Is there any way of distilling that into something simpler?
Yes, put very simply, it's about getting all children into school and also about giving them the best opportunities possible when they're in school too, as Phil was saying. In some cases, such as physical or learning disabilities, that may well require a major change in attitudes in some context. And as Phil also said, you should focus on what children can do rather than what they can't do. It's worth highlighting the social model Phil mentioned here as well. Education systems need to adapt and change to ensure they support all children, It's not about individual children adapting and changing to fit the educational systems.
But of course, as Huma mentioned, even if the attitude or policies are there, the reality at school level could well be different. And it's tough. If you're a teacher and you have a class of 40 or 50 learners, you've had no support in terms of how you can manage someone with, say, a learning disability, these could be very difficult situations.
Yes, as ever, support for teachers is absolutely essential. But it's more than that too. As Phil pointed out, it needs to be everyone pulling together. Not only a whole school approach, but more broadly, a multi-agency approach is what's needed.
Okay, thanks, Simon. And as ever, there's much to consider from this episode. So if you're interested in reading more about it, you can find related links on the theme of inclusion on the same page as this recording. And if you'd like to comment on something you've heard in this episode, we'd be very happy to hear your thoughts. You can share them with us on Facebook or Twitter using the hashtag EducationSouthAsia. That's hashtag EducationSouthAsia. Finally, don't forget that there are plenty of other episodes to check out in this series too, from educational planning to improving learning outcomes. For now, thanks for listening to this episode of Education in Focus South Asia. From Simon and me, goodbye.